Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. It's time for a visit with Spengler, the nom de guerre of David Goldman, a man of truly renaissance intellectual capacity. And I think, fortunately, he puts it to very good use in a number of outlets and publications and joins us from time to time, I'm happy to say, for that purpose. He is the managing director of Reorient Group. You can find his writings, among other places, in, I believe it is, Asia Times. And we're always delighted to catch up with him on the various subjects that are the subject of his focus at the moment, including the departure today of Janet Yellen and what might be her legacy at the Fed. David, welcome back. It's so good to have you with us.
Frank, it's a privilege. Thank you.
So, she is stepping down. The man replacing her seems to be promising not much of a change, but give us sort of an assessment of her record and, in particular, where we find ourselves now as interest rates are beginning to rise. Is that likely to be a continuing practice, or do you think it's not going to impose much more of a burden on our economy than it is at the moment?
The Federal Reserve was pretty clear about what it wanted to do, which is to push people out of safe investments into riskier investments to stimulate economic activity. And they did that by keeping interest rates extremely low for a long period of time. Clearly, they're afraid that if they were to reverse that policy too quickly, then you might have a sharp reversal in markets. There are people like Yellen's predecessor, Alan Greenspan, warning that there are bubbles in the stock and bond market. So I think what the Federal Reserve will do, as it has signaled as clearly as it can, is to act very gradually and very slowly. So there's already an expectation of interest rates rising in the future, which is built into the market. We have priced into the market two additional quarter point increases in the Federal Reserve's overnight rate during the next year. I think we'll probably get another quarter point increase. The really aggressive economic optimists think we might get four instead of two. But what that would translate into, just looking at the graphs, is maybe another 0.3% in treasury yields. The only risk is that if we get a real bout of inflation because labor costs start to shoot up, the Federal Reserve might decide to act a lot more quickly, in which case we could have a real rout in the bond market and some discomfort. Right now, I think we have a modest headwind, and stock prices will chop sideways for a while as they digest it.
Well, let me take advantage of your expertise in all of these matters to ask you about a wild card in the deck, which is, as our friend Kevin Freeman has observed recently, the prospect of significant and perhaps growing capital flight, and that perhaps to some extent the interest rates are going to have to rise on T-bills simply to try to attract further investment at a moment when, as I think you've written, the Japanese seem to be less and less interested in putting money into our treasury notes, but perhaps also the Russians and Chinese as well. What are your thoughts?
I think this is a longer-term concern. Obviously, if the United States keeps running big current account deficits and we keep running big budget deficits, we have to keep borrowing and we have to borrow from foreigners at some point. There will be a dollar crisis, but I don't think we're anywhere near close to it. Right now, I believe that the Chinese are gradually and tentatively trying to develop their RMB as an alternate reserve currency, and we see very symbolic signs of that. For example, the German Central Bank, the European Central Bank, rather, now owns a tiny amount of RMB in its reserve portfolio, but to make a reserve currency work requires many financial engineering, legal, and regulatory changes, which it will take the Chinese years to make. So I think at a 4 or 5 year horizon, That is a serious concern, but I don't think it's a story for 2018. It's simply too difficult to create an alternative to the dollar in the short term.
Dr. Goldman, let me ask you, you heard the Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, talking up, it sounded like, a weaker dollar. Then when he was called on it, he said, oh, no, I didn't mean to do that at all. Is there a dollar crisis in the making in regard to American government policy?
I think Secretary Mnuchin was speaking offhand without taking into account how closely the market would read every syllable of his statement. And I think he walked that back because he never intended to drive the dollar down in the first place. The president also, of course, talked about dollar strength in keeping with a strong U.S. economy. It's certainly the case that the dollar has weakened over the past year. Dollar would buy 1.03 euros about a year ago. Now it's about 1.24. So that's just nearly that's about a 20% decline. That certainly helped our exports. U.S. export growth has been very strong because the dollar has been cheaper. However, I don't believe that the administration has anything like a worked-out policy to cheapen the dollar further. I think that the press has made too much of these statements. And I don't think they really have thought it out, and they're not on a war path for a cheap dollar.
So if there is a crisis, it won't be of our intentional making. That's the key message here. David, let me turn to one last subject that we won't have time to do justice to because it's complicated and dynamic, unfortunately. But you've written at Asia Times recently about America's Syria humiliation is worse than it looks. That would be a humiliation, I guess, primarily at the moment at the hands of the Iranians, but most especially and most visibly the Turks. What's going on there, and what would you be recommending in terms of policy for the United States at this moment in Syria?
In a nutshell, we decided to create a 30,000-strong border security force, mainly composed of the Kurds, who'd been our allies against ISIS, and had fought very effectively. The Turks have a restive Kurdish population. They're afraid of their country splitting up. They don't like Kurdish power, so they said they wouldn't tolerate it, and they sent their army into Syria. Hasn't done very well, from what I've heard, by the way. The United States politely asked the Turks to stop, and the Turks refused to. That is a very un-ally-like action on the part of the Turks, who thumbed their noses at it. The worst of it is Turkish stocks and the Turkish currency went up all through this, which means bad actors or semi-hostile actors that don't like us, like Qatar, like the Chinese, are financing the Turks. Turkish currency is inherently very weak. The fact that it went up in the midst of a strategic confrontation with the United States is really humiliating. What should we do? Very quietly, we should make sure the Kurds have the wherewithal to hurt the Turks badly and make them want to pull out.
And otherwise, presumably, impress upon them that behaving in this fashion will entail costs with us as well. David, this is a subject to which I look forward to returning with you and others in the days ahead, as I think that the problem with Turkey is growing and is likely to become more strategically fraught, especially as it pulls in the likes of the Iranians and the Chinese and the Russians and the Qataris. We appreciate the work you do in helping sort all of this at the Asia Times, among other places, and look forward to doing so with you again here at Secure Freedom. Thank you for your time today, my friend. Come back to us again very soon. Next up, we will speak with Evan Sayet, comedian extraordinaire, about nationalism and socialism, and what happens when the twain meet. That and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.